6. On Parnassos, 10 years ago. At the time this story happened, according to Siv, there was a child among the Skyr, which was a big deal. The people of Parnassos valued children above all else, for they knew that without children, their band would die out completely within a few generations. In the last 10 years, however, babies had become rare and pregnancy most often ended in tragedy. Whether it was something in the air, or the acidic rain, or maybe a lack of vital nutrients, most children were lost before their mothers' bellies even began to swell. But a healthy baby had been born to a Skyr woman named Ylva, and the clan was committed to keeping mother and child safe. By the time she was 5, Ylva's child was old enough to hunt frogs and urchins and contribute to the clan, so she was given the name Frey. It was a rare thing that a child lived long enough to be given a name, and Frey brought hope to the Skyr clan and was loved and indulged by everyone. Thanks to her small size and nimble fingers, she was able to venture into caves the rest of the clan couldn't explore, and to snatch birds' eggs from the narrow shelves of rock on which they nested. She was the first child to reach the age of 5 in years, the only one thus far of her generation, and everyone loved her and doted on her. Keldo and Phasma had been firmly in charge for about 2 years, and the group was flourishing. Although she still kept her warriors close, Phasma considered it her responsibility to keep everyone in the Skyr group in good physical condition and well-trained with weapons, including those who had no talent for it, or those too old or infirm to actively defend the group. Even little Frey begged Phasma to teach her to fight, and Phasma made her a child-sized axe out of stone and driftwood. Together, they would playfully practice on the floor of the Nautilus cave whenever it was dry. One day, Siv and Phasma were sparring on the cliffs, leaping from rock spire to rock spire as they parried and sliced with their blades near the edge of their territory. It took agility and strength, maneuvering over sharp rocks with the crashing ocean far below. Suddenly, Phasma put up a hand to stop the fight and used her ancient pair of quadnocks to scan the horizon.
"Balder," she said. "Are the claws attacking?" Siv asked, glad she had her scythes in hand.
The claws were a local warband led by a particularly vicious Dug named Balder. All of the Skyr folk were human, but they had stories passed down from their ancestors suggesting that there had once been Dugs, plus Chadrafan and Rodians among their numbers. Balder, as far as they knew, was the last of his kind. The claws had more people and more fighters in particular, but what Balder didn't have was the brain power of the siblings who led the Skyr.
"It's not an attack. It's just Balder. But he's watching us. Has been for a while now."
Siv's hands tightened on the hilts of her blades.
"Do you think he wants the land? The Nautilus?"
Phasma turned her knocks in the other direction, toward the bulk of the stone cliffs where their band lived their communal life. The people were relaxed and working. Keldo sat on a soft skin, apportioning out water, and Torben was teaching Frey how to swing her axe.
"I think he wants Frey."
"Why?"
"Because she's the most precious thing we have."
Siv considered it and asked,
"Then why now?"
"Because now she's useful. The claws didn't have to spend the time and resources to keep her alive when she was an infant, but now they'd be happy to use her."
The thought made Siv's blood boil.
"We can't let that happen."
Phasma looked again in the direction of the claw territory.
"No, we can't."
From then on, Phasma posted 2 guards at the edge of their territory, and every shift reported Balder's spies keeping watch. So Phasma watched the claws watching her people, and she hatched a plan. This was notable because until now she'd always worked in tandem with her brother, Keldo, as if they were 2 arms on the same body. But this time she told only her warriors. She didn't mention to Keldo that they would be raided soon. And she didn't tell him that she'd scouted into the claw territory to spy on Balder in turn. But Siv knew. Finally, on a moonless night, it happened. Phasma and her people were sleeping in their net hammocks, strung between the tallest rock spires, when the ululating cries of the claws sounded, echoing off the stone. But Phasma was ready. She swung from her hammock, fully awake and brandishing her spear, leaping from rock to rock toward the most secure hammock, where Ilva always slept with Frey strapped to her chest. Her warriors likewise burst out of their hammocks, armed and awake, ready to fight. The rest of the Skyre folk had no idea the raid was coming, but they rallied and readied their weapons. The first of the Skyre's night lookouts screamed and fell, cut down by Baldur himself, her body splashing into the ocean below and quickly being dragged down into the dark water by gleaming white teeth at least a meter long. Phasma watched it happen, too far away to save the guard, and screamed her rage. The Skyre had not lost a member in many moons, and a dirty way it was to die.
"The Mother is there!"
Baldur shouted, hanging from an outcropping and pointing to where Ilva cowered in a rock cleft, arms wrapped around the bundle strapped to her chest.
"But I am here!" Phasma taunted.
The people of the Skyre moved to circle and protect Ilva, and Phasma moved between Baldur and her people.
"You don't scare me, girl child," Baldur growled.
Although he was much smaller than Phasma, the Dug had the natural agility and aggression of his species on his side, as well as a unique fighting style, thanks to the fact that he walked on his hands and used his nimble lower legs to manipulate his weapons. Phasma had never personally fought him before, but she wasn't going to give him any advantage. As he circled, Phasma leapt for him. In one hand she held her spear topped with its slender blade, and in the other hand she had an axe of rusty metal. Of the many remnants of the old mines that her people scavenged, nothing was as useful as the old saw blades and machinery strong enough to hew through rock itself. She drew first blood on Baldur and laughed, taking a fierce joy in the fight. Before now, the raids had been mostly tests, but this battle was for real. It was hard to keep track of who died and who lived as the members of the Skyre fought for their lives. Although they kept a tight circle around Ilva, some Claw members managed to leap or fight through the protective ring. Torben stood closest to Ilva, the last line of defense with his mighty clubs bristling with spikes. For all that she had her bundle strapped to her chest, Ilva fought as ferociously as anyone, taking down two claw fighters with the rusty saw blades Phasma had taught her to wield. Even Keldo took down a claw for all that he could fight only in one place, tethered to his stone spire by lines and forced to fight on one foot. But Phasma was the warrior who did the most damage. Clad in her mask and climbing spikes, she was strong, tall, quick, and the master of every weapon she carried. For all that Baldur had the physical advantage, Phasma fought like she craved death at the enemy's hand, like she longed to fall on Baldur's Beheada, a famed Dug weapon he painstakingly crafted from an old mining blade. But the Beheada was a weapon for distance, and Phasma quickly closed with Baldur, fighting past his own circle of defense and forcing him to turn away from Ilva and use more intimate tools to best her.
"It was like a dance," Siv told me. "A teen girl dressed like a monster, weapons spinning in her hands as she fought an adult male Dug."
Phasma parried every hit and struck back until Baldur dripped blood from his stone-gray skin. One of the reasons he ruled was because he didn't fall ill from his wounds as easily as the humans so often did, but he was soon panting and slowing down. His knife fell from his cut foot as if the appendage were numb, but still he continued fighting. When Phasma lopped off one of his ear fins, dripping with ceremonial baubles, Baldur finally bellowed in rage, spun and swung away, calling a retreat. The claws followed him gladly, for they had lost a dozen members and sustained their own damage without obtaining the child they sought. Phasma stood tall on her stone spire by a Skyre flag, hefted her axe in the air and screamed her war cry. Her people gathered around, including Ilva, who was exhausted having been the focus of the attack.
"How is the child?" Keldo called.
But when Ilva unbuckled her burden, there was no sign of Frey.
Her bundle was full of ragged blankets. The Skyar people gasped, shocked that despite being routed, Baldur's people had managed to steal the child they'd all been willing to die to protect. And that's when Phasma untied her bulky coat to show that she'd carried Frey herself, the child strapped to her chest and unharmed.
"You took a great risk, sister,"
Keldo said, looking very grim. "And it paid off. We won't be seeing Baldur for a while.
If ever."
That got everyone's attention. As Phasma unbuckled Frey and transferred the child back to her mother, Keldo pressed her.
"And why is that? After tonight, I would think him twice as likely to attack now that we've denied him his prize."
"Did you see how Baldur couldn't fight any longer? How his weapons fell from his feet and he looked at his toes in horror? I tried another gambit, and it was successful."
"And you didn't tell me?"
"I wasn't sure if it would work. We've always assumed that wounds fester because of the air, but I realized that it's from the lichen on the rocks. Even touching it makes your fingertips go numb. So I pounded the lichen to make a paste and smeared it on my blades. That is why Baldur weakened. Even dug blood is no match for poison." She held up her axe, and it was clear to see that a light green substance was on the metal, mixed in with blood and bits of gray flesh.
"Why did you not share this with the tribe?"
Keldo asked, his rage barely contained.
"When we all could have benefited from this knowledge.
I had to test it first. I had to be sure. And I'm telling you now."
"Sister, I am ashamed of you."
Phasma hooked her weapons on her belt and made her way to the spire on which he sat, his good leg and his half leg dangling down over the churning ocean far below.
"Are you ashamed that I bested our enemy, saved a mother and child, and protected the Skyar's territory? Or are you ashamed that I chose not to include you in my plans?"
Keldo carefully considered her, as good leaders do. He knew that to lose his temper would be to lose face.
"We rule together, Phasma. We always have."
Phasma didn't flinch, didn't blink.
"And we still do. But fighting is my province, brother. And today, we fought. And we won!"
She gave a war cry, and the people of the Skyar echoed it, hefting their weapons at the night sky so full of faraway stars.
"While Baldur is crippled and his people recover, we should return the favor. Raid their settlement. Take their territory. They have a plateau big enough for their entire band to sleep on. They light a fire at night, and cook their food, and warm their flesh. Every night! The people of the Skyar deserve to feel that fire's warmth and to watch our Frey walk on soft ground."
At that, however, the people did not shout their agreement. They quieted and looked to Keldo. Keldo's face was grim.
"That, sister, I cannot allow. It is one thing to kill to defend our home and our sacred cave, but it is another thing to trespass against a neighbor, no matter how tyrannical. We are good and strong, but we are not murderers. I'd rather sleep free with a clean conscience than warm myself over an innocent person's bones. We should use this period of fragility to forge a peace with Baldur's people. Surely they, like us, understand that if we spent more time surviving and producing children and less time fighting, all our people would be strengthened. If we continue to squabble over nothing, we'll all be gone. One, maybe two more generations, and there will be no one left to fight. Nothing left to fight over."
The people of the Skyar nodded along to these wise words, but Phasma breathed out a hum of disapproval, the steam curling from her mask, which she hadn't yet removed.
"You are too fond of peace," she said simply.
"I am a leader, and a leader does what is best for the people."
Phasma shook her head and turned away.
"I am a fighter. I do what I must to survive. And making peace with Baldur will not save us.
After Phasma had left to sit alone on a far promontory where the Night Guard had fallen, the Skyer voted. It was decided to let Keldo pursue peace with Baldur, although Phasma's warriors voted against it. Keldo's closest confidants helped him make the journey to Claw territory the next day. He did not request his sister's presence or aid. Phasma and her warriors watched, silent, as the procession passed them by. A vote was a vote, after all. As the Dug was unconscious and still healing from the wounds Phasma had inflicted, Baldur's people had no choice but to agree to Keldo's terms. A fragile peace was negotiated between Skyer and Claw, without Phasma and without Baldur. There would be no more raids. They would work together for a shared future, trading goods and encouraging new friendships that might lead to healthy children. Everyone cheered, and Keldo's chosen Skyer folk stood on actual ground for the first time in many years, enjoying the brief safety of Claw Land. Phasma and her warriors had remained behind, standing vigil on their rock spires, guarding the Nautilus and the most helpless members of the clan, as they always had. But they heard the cheers as Keldo's procession returned. Phasma wore her mask, but her hands were in fists. She turned her back on the celebration and stared out at the ocean. For their very different roles in this new peace, Phasma and Keldo were celebrated as heroes. But for Phasma, it wasn't a peace. It was a betrayal. Maybe she'd withheld her plans from Keldo, but he'd directly opposed her, then scorned her. She would not forget it.